There's a genome study out this week that's getting buried under all the political news, but it genuinely advances our understanding of human origins. Researchers found DNA from what they're calling ghost ancestors in all living humans, not just isolated populations, but universally. These are archaic human lineages that interbred with our Homo sapiens ancestors tens of thousands of years ago, populations that left no fossil record that's been identified, but whose genetic signature persists in every living person on Earth.
The ghost ancestor designation is used when researchers detect a genetic signal that doesn't match any known archaic human, not Neanderthal, not Denisovan, but is clearly distinct from modern human DNA in ways that suggest a separate, older lineage. Finding this universally, rather than in geographically isolated populations, suggests there were multiple interbreeding events across different migration routes. It pushes back against a clean, out-of-Africa replacement model and toward a much messier, more reticulated picture of how modern humans came to be.
The El Niño forecast deserves placement next to this because it's a story about deep system dynamics that unfold on timescales humans struggle to plan for. Forecasters this week warned the 2026 El Niño event could break all previous records in intensity. The economic costs of a record El Niño would be felt primarily through agricultural disruption, altered rainfall patterns affect wheat production in Australia, coffee in Colombia, rice across Southeast Asia, and through intensified wildfire and flooding risks across different regions simultaneously.
That's actually the thread that connects to the European wildfire story. Economists this week published analysis warning that Europe's heat waves and wildfires are transitioning from weather events into macroeconomic threats, affecting insurance markets, agricultural output, and labor productivity in ways that are showing up in GDP calculations. The southern European tourism economy, which has been a growth driver for Spain, Greece, Italy, and Portugal, faces existential questions if summer temperatures consistently exceed tourist comfort levels.
The startup CEO, who apologized for offering job interviews to anyone who got a company tattoo, I want to give this story its moment. A CEO offered employment consideration as an incentive for permanent body modification. The fact that he apologized suggests the reaction was immediate and severe. But the underlying impulse, creating extreme loyalty signals as hiring criteria, is a fascinating window into the cultural pressures on startup founders who conflate personal commitment with organizational capability.
All right, let's do our what if we're wrong exercise, because I think the consensus view on big tech AI spending deserves rigorous challenge. The dominant narrative right now, and Marcus and I have both echoed versions of this today, is that the $170 billion quarterly AI spending number represents rational investment in the defining technology of the next decade, that the companies with the most compute will win, and that negative free cash flow is acceptable short-term pain for long-term competitive positioning.
So what's the strongest case that we're wrong about that? Let me try to steelman the counterargument. The first assumption to question is whether AI capability improvement translates to proportional revenue generation. We've seen extraordinary capability gains, Claude, GPT-4.0, Gemini, but the monetization story is concentrated in a handful of applications. Enterprise productivity software, coding assistance, search enhancement. These are real and growing. But are they growing at a pace that justifies $170 billion per quarter in perpetuity?
The second assumption worth challenging is the winner-take-all framing. The argument for massive spending is that if you fall behind in AI infrastructure, you lose permanently. But history doesn't fully support that in technology. IBM fell behind in PCs and survived. Microsoft missed mobile badly and remained dominant in enterprise. The companies spending the most aggressively on AI compute today are assuming the competitive dynamics will look like the early internet, where the infrastructure build-out determined everything. It might look more like the cloud, where the first movers built an advantage, but it was contestable and multiple players coexisted profitably.
The third assumption is about energy. These data centers run on enormous amounts of electricity. The $15 billion Anthropic data center, the DeepSeek 1 gigawatt facility in Inner Mongolia, all of them require power infrastructure that is itself constrained. If power capacity becomes the binding constraint on AI compute expansion before the revenue arrives, companies that overcommitted to compute capacity could find themselves with stranded assets.
What would tell us we're right to be skeptical? Watch the monetization data relative to capital expenditure. If by mid-2027, the revenue per dollar of AI infrastructure investment hasn't started inflecting upward, the negative cash flow story stops being a growth narrative and starts being a capital allocation problem. The specific metric to track is AI-attributed revenue growth rate versus CapEx growth rate. Right now, CapEx is growing faster. That gap needs to close.
And watch the power procurement story. Utility contracts signed in the next 6 months will tell you whether compute expansion is truly infrastructure limited or whether there's actually headroom. If you see major AI companies signing long-term power purchase agreements at premium prices, they're still expanding. If that slows, it suggests the physical constraints are biting before the business case fully arrived.